This is Mona Lisa Baseball.
Welcome to the show, A13.
One of the reasons why I was really interested to have you on the show is you go to the Dominican Republic once a year.
I went to San Diego State because they had just created a program in sports business. It was the early to mid 2000s, and that was a huge interest of mine. The way that MLB was operating there has come a really long way in the 20 years since, but it was something that I felt needed some kind of attention. And I thought this program is partnered with the Padres. That would be a good way to get a foot in the door with what's happening there. The Padres had just opened their Dominican Academy around the time that I had come out. So it was a good way to get in the mix.
So when you say it's come a long ways in the last 20 years, what was going on then and what had your attention and what needed more attention?
When I graduated college was around the time that a couple of investigative journalists in the Washington Post, and I was in DC at the time, just reading the newspaper on the metro like everybody else in the pre-smartphone days, They were doing a lot of investigative reports about what was happening to prospects in the DR, namely age and identity issues, which is more of an administrative hassle than anything. But the thing that bugged me the most was the steroid abuse. And we're talking about kids, like teenagers, like if you want a 13, 14, 12 year old, something like that, like the fact that they were getting over the counter, and you still can to this day get like pretty much any steroid over the counter in the Dominican Republic. And that's something that MLB teams have to watch very closely when their athletes from the DR go back for the winter. You know, there's been plenty of suspensions that have gone on due to taking the wrong substance. I messed that up. But the instances I was reading about in the paper and then subsequent research that I had done, it was more like really bad stuff, like horse steroids and uppers and all this stuff that was going into really young developing bodies that really couldn't handle it. And there were some really tragic stories that would come out of it as a result. And it's just a person who loves baseball and also feels like kids should not be subjected to, you know, deadly or harmful substances going into their body. I felt like that was something that really could be eradicated with the right attention. And like I said, it has gotten a lot better, but in those days it was a little bit of a wild west in the Dominican Republic in terms of the identity stuff. 9/11 really pushed that to the forefront, where the US government cracked down substantially on visa applications. And obviously the steroid abuse and performance enhancing drugs became a much bigger deal because baseball had its own issues with that going on stateside in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was also just a huge issue there because we weren't talking about name any of the steroid guys that you want to name, but we were talking about like 15, 16 year old kids. And when you do that to a developing body, it can really, really mess things up, especially if you don't have the dosage or you're not, I mean, they're like horse steroids going into these kids.
Yeah. Reminds me, Danny Almonte, does that name ring a bell?
Well, that was an identity fraud thing, right? Wasn't he older than 12? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on the Little League World Series. And
what's crazy about that is it never crossed my mind that he not only could be 2 to 3 years older, but he might be roiding. Oh my
God. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to take a stab at this. Fairly poor country, not tons of opportunity, best way out of the ghetto, so to speak, be a baseball star, get noticed young. Hey, might as well pop these pills. They're not going to make you any worse. You want to get out of the ghetto? Give it everything you got. Is that kind of like the classic version?
It's considered by most young baseball players their ticket out of abject poverty. The communities where these kids come from are some of the poorest around. The Dominican educational system lags far behind anybody else in the Western Hemisphere, including Haiti in a lot of ways. So there's really just not a lot of options for young, poor males to see a path out. And baseball is considered a way to provide for your family. If you talk to these guys, and I have for, you know, over a decade and a half now, like, they want to buy their mom a house. They want to take care of their family. And they're signed at 16. So they're really kids the whole time. Like, they become professional athletes at 16.
Oh, that's so crazy. When I was 16, I was playing for my JV team, and I was excited because I sat my whole freshman year. And thinking back of being 16, my God, did I feel young.
Yeah. And a lot of these kids, they'll go and live with, they'd prefer to be called independent trainers, but the lingo that's been used around them for decades is called a buscón, which is basically like a searcher or a finder. They're scouts that live all over the country, and they kind of take over like a local empty lot. And it'll just be a grassy field. Maybe there's like an infield cut out of it. Maybe not. There's usually some netting strung up as a backstop, sometimes a fence, sometimes just like random, whatever they can get. I've been at one where there's a cow just like grazing in left field, like eating the grass and mowing the grass. But these guys are almost all washed out players themselves. The system that is currently in place, because the draft does not exist, the draft is coming. They're very against it. The people that are part of the system right now, basically teams can sign players at age 16. So if you do the math and work backwards, a lot of these players are living with these guys. They'll live in like six or eight to a room, share a big mattress with a bunch of other 12, 13 year olds. And they'll train all day, every day, doing fundamentals, lifting weights like buckets full of rocks or concrete mold out of a bucket with a big pole sticking out of it as like a barbell or dumbbell. So the kids will leave their families if they show promise, or if they're just really poor and they want to, and they don't want to go to school, and they're like, nope, I want to be a baseball player. They'll go live with these guys, and they will mostly live with these guys through most of the year. And scouts will come around, and the scouts are not supposed to interact with people below a certain age, and then they're supposed to sign them at 16. But obviously, if you're going to sign someone at 16, you've got your eye on them a year or two or three prior to that. And it's open season. It's a free agency market. So if the Marlins are interested and the Marlins scout knows a guy and says, hey, that guy is, you know, he's 14, he throws 88, he's, you know, 6'2", projected to get even bigger, maybe. That's the way that the system currently works. So a lot of the kids, and which is the thing that bothered me the most, is a lot of these kids, you just mentioned you were psyched to play JV baseball at 16 years old. These kids are not playing games most of the time. They are just training and training and training. And they're not even doing the fun part of baseball, like knocking in the winning run and, you know, getting showered with water and Gatorade by your teammates. They are just literally just like training for a job. And this past June, we were down there and we went to a facility for a guy who has a couple of guys and got a couple guys signed. And there were four or five guys hitting fungo balls and doing a workout. And my students all went there and they were just taking grounders, and the guy's throwing five, six balls in a row at them, and they're fielding it and getting rid of it, fielding it, getting rid of it. And then they're doing sprints in the outfield. And I mean, it's humid as hell. It's just like hot as can be. And my students, most of them don't speak Spanish, but they were trying to like communicate, like they were sharing a glove. And these kids were just like not in the mood. And it was just, you contrast that with how fun Little League is and making like the city championship. You contrast that with, you know, playing Babe Ruth or whatever they call it these days, playing JV, playing varsity baseball, and like having your jacket and going to the away game and, you know, hanging out with your teammate. Like, none of that happens. It's just a system by which guys live with oftentimes a stranger, just like a coach. Yeah. But imagine the pressure, like you're 12, 13, 14 years old, like for 5, 6 years, you've lived away from your family. You literally are just at like the mercy of your coach, and you're just like waiting for that day that maybe you'll get signed. It's really wild.
That's the thought of them not playing in games. Well, that didn't never cross my mind. Not even close.
Yeah,
man.
When they get signed, the Dominican Summer League is all these 16, 17, 18, 19 ish year old guys. And a lot of the teams will have two, like an A and a B team. And they're growing in number over the years that I've been going there. Every team used to have one Dominican Summer League squad. And now a lot of the, almost all of them have two. So like the Dodgers A will go on the road and Dodgers B will play at home and then they'll switch the next day. And they play, they keep stats. They have TrackMan, they have professionalized umpires, they wear uniforms. It looks, but it's like, if you watch it, it's like a really janky high school game, like wild pitches galore, you know, guys making huge mental mistakes all the time because they're basically learning the fundamentals of baseball games after they've already signed a professional contract. They're signed based on like raw talent and projection. Right. And these days it's like, will we be able to get this pitcher to hit 100? Like, can we bulk him up and get his arm healthy enough to throw 102? And then he can come in the sixth inning. We'll bring a second one in the seventh, another one in the eighth, and another one. Right. So it's kind of a disposable, like interchangeable type thing. But a lot of the other position players, you know, the baseball IQ takes decades to get to where a professional level. And a lot of times they're behind because they're not doing the reps. They're not really familiar with all the variables of being in the field. And okay, that runner looked me off and this and that. Like, there's just so much to learn. And you learned it coming up through ranks, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. Yeah. But a lot of these guys just haven't had that, the good fortune to be born in California.
Yeah. When you say that the draft is coming, I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, a lot of people suspect that an international draft will be coming down the road. Everyone sort of tends to see that it is going to happen at some point, which will obviously run into a slotting system. There's been a lot of pushback against it from the people who frankly benefit a lot from the current system. So these independent trainer guys are like, no, I'll draft. And they'll have like, famous buddies. Like, I've seen a social media video with like David Ortiz, who's like, I'm against the draft and we don't want this. And, you know, we were down there once, and there was a, like an MLB executives and some Dominican government people. And there was a protest about the draft and these guys like lit some tires on fire in the road to like stop traffic. And that's a common way of protesting. Oh, yeah. But that was like, hey, we don't want this. And everybody was skeptical that, you know, this is going to happen. And what basically it means is it takes away free agency, right? Like, if you have a deal with the Reds or the Nationals or the Mariners, and they're like, we'll give this prospect $2 million. Well, his independent trainer, who may have literally raised him since age 8 or 9, he's looking for ROI. Like, he wants to recoup his training expenses. And a lot of these academies, like, they all have a staff. They'll have a hitting guy, a pitching guy, a strength and conditioning guy. It's not a high school. It's not a baseball team. It's just a field with an operation that just operates on the field. And they can sometimes take like 30-40% of that signing bonus. So that $2 million quickly turns into 1.4 or whatever, because the trainer has this handshake deal with the parents, or sometimes a contract, but not often. So it's just a very wild system where if you look at an agent in the US, I mean, they're mostly attorneys, right? They're not coaches, and they'll take, you know, 3-5% of the value of a contract, whereas these guys are going at more than a third.
Jeez. You got my head swimming.
Do you have any idea of what the rough percentage is of kids who enter these programs who actually end up getting affiliated with an MLB team?
I don't have the stats of who makes it from training with a trainer to getting signed, but I know that getting signed and getting sent to the US is somewhere around 2%. So most of these kids, if they do get signed, they're probably going to never leave the island. 97% of them won't get even sent to extended spring training, rookie ball, A, low A, whatever it is. So they're mostly just going to stick around because it's really, really hard to move up. But you go anywhere and you meet players, former players, all over the place. And every young man in his late teens, 20s will say either like, I signed with the Marlins, like I had an Uber driver in Providence who was like, oh, I was a catcher and I blew my knee out. And so I was 14. I was looking at maybe getting signed. And it's just like the culture is so driven toward that goal. It's crazy because here it's like, oh, I play high school ball. I mean, maybe I'll go to college and play if I'm good enough. You know, there's the wooden bat leagues in Cape Cod and all that kind of stuff for people that are like, there's all these levels. But for there, it's like, did you sign at 16? Like, could you make it so that you got that big payday? And unfortunately, it's a lot of like doing the work up front, right? It's a lot of years of grounders and working on your bat speed and working on your, like you go to the, like a beach down there, a gorgeous beach. And there's like all these 14, 15 year old boys in athletic gear, just sprinting on the sand back and forth while a bunch of other people are just kind of hanging out and drinking, having a good time at the beach. And it's very odd to see if you take a step back and you think about like, well, what are they doing? Like they're not employees yet, but they're putting in an awful lot of work and a number of hours of their childhood and adolescence to hone skills that will be attractive to an employer down the road. So in a sense, it's not child labor because they're not being paid for those services at 12 or 13. But if you don't do it at 12 or 13, you're not going to have the talent at 16. So it's kind of like a, I don't know if it's a chicken and egg is a good analogy, but it's sort of like a deferred payment in a way of like this bonus I'll give you because of your potential as a pro athlete is related to the work you did as a child. That doesn't seem great for the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any sort of little league system or something we would recognize at all outside of what you've been describing?
There are some, but it's not like,
it's for rich kids, right?
It's not everywhere like we have here. A lot of the Dominican Republic is really remote, like outside of Santo Domingo, Santiago, and some of the other big cities. Really remote. So MLB, to its credit, has grown the RBI program there. And, you know, the Little League World Series will have a team probably every year from, they're probably going to dominate that region and go play in the Little League World Series. But a lot of those kids are from the capital, come from some means. You know, they're probably not the best players on the island at all, but they have the ability to get noticed and play an organized ball. But a lot of 12-year-olds are not playing any organized ball really at all. Like they're just hitting and fielding and running and pitching and all that.
I know. I'm thinking, what if basketball practice was just running sprints and liners?
Sucks.
And layup drills. Like, well, what about when we get to like, you know, score and the crowd roars? Like, nah.
We went this year to a little league where there's a guy in a neighborhood that's kind of like government housing. And it was gnarly, man. There was just a dirt field covered in rocks, like construction equipment all over, 150 feet away from home plate. It was like a half a field wedged in. And we played like a little scrimmage against the kids and they had little uniforms and he'll take them to the Capitol and they'll play some games. But like, that's the first I've seen of any kind of little league. And I've been going there almost every year since 2009.
Yeah. Is there, I know the answer to this, but I got to ask you just to make sure, are there any other sports that this system is working towards getting them off the island? Football, basketball, anything like that? Is it, this is just baseball. That's how it is. It's baseball. It's nothing else.
They've taken major strides with basketball. Recently, Al Horford is Dominican. So his mom's Dominican and was, I think he was born there as well. So that was a big deal, him winning a title this year. Soccer has taken off. There's like a Barcelona branded academy there and there's some stuff going on there, but that's more of like a youth soccer camp cash grab. They have them all over the world and they'll be like, oh, put your kid here in this camp and then also look for diamonds in the rough and try to scoop them up. But basketball, soccer, on the women's side, they're all about indoor volleyball. So they're called the Queens of the Caribbean and it's unfortunately kind of a similar system. Well, if they're really tall and athletic at a certain age, they'll go live in the capital at a basically like a government facility and play for the U14 or U16. So if you look at like the world volleyball rankings, the Dominican Republic is like consistently top five.
Oh, wow.
But sadly, for a pretty similar reason, where they take a lot of the young folks and are like, yeah, let's go.
Mm-hmm. So you've been going for 15-ish years. What are some things about Dominican Republic that speak to your heart? Or what are some of your favorite things about being there?
I love the people. I think it is one of the most outgoing and outwardly generous places I've been in the entire world. And the people, they call it like they see it. They're survivors. Like, they've been historically, if you look at the country and its history going all the way back to the Taino people, they've been really kind of dumped on by a lot of colonial powers, including the United States of America, and invaded and everything. They've had dictatorships and violent uprisings. And there's just been so much where they've been kind of cast aside and forgotten about, and from the sugar trade, and there's just so much going on there. It's amazing that the people are the way they are, that they're the happiest, that they consistently rank extremely high on happiness rankings in spite of, you know, not having a great GDP. And there's just still huge problems with literacy and poverty, but the people are happy. They look out for their neighbor, and there's so much good that can come from having that kind of attitude. But I think a lot of the stuff that goes on with baseball is probably part and parcel of the way that they've had to scrape and make do with what they have. And right now the system is such that baseball talent is a natural resource that United States corporations, and we know them as MLB teams, but they're US-based corporations, or they're one corporation with MLB. They want that cheap resource. And it's not unlike other natural resources that have been exploited in the developing world for hundreds of years, like going in and getting all the minerals out of a country in sub-Saharan Africa, or going in and taking the timber, trying to find gold, and not caring what happens to anybody in our way. It's unfortunately, as a perpetrator of a lot of that here in the United States, I think we have to look inward at, like, okay, well, what does that mean in the modern era? Like, could they change the rules? Yeah, of course. That's what I think is so critical as we look at this situation and think about it 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Is it still going to be like this? Or could we wave our magic wand and say, hey, moving forward, every prospect will be signed at 18, and they all must have a high school degree or a GED equivalent. They have an equivalent of a GED there. No questions asked. They have to be literate in order to do this. And what that's going to do is going to make all these guys who are training these kids have to hire some teachers to teach them how to read. And in a lot of cases, it sounds wild to say it, a lot of these kids are not necessarily literate, because they're dropping out of school. Like, they're leaving school. Like, they're, oh, and you'll hear a lot of them say, oh yeah, well, like, yeah, these kids go to class. They definitely do. But you have to have some skepticism on that. There has to be some kind of like, well, really? Like, cause it's a Monday and I don't see these kids in school. But understanding at the structural level from the league, and I mean that as just singularly MLB, like, there's Japanese academies down there as well from some Japanese teams in MPB, but MLB obviously rules the roost, is the most money available. And I would love to see some kind of saying, hey, we love this talent, but if we pass some policies, things would change quickly. They're still going to be cheaper than signing a kid out of UCLA or Stanford, but you could also just say, hey, and they also have to read and or pass a high school graduation equivalency. And I don't think it would hurt the talent. I think it would just probably make them better as they go up through the ladder and through the system of minor leagues. That's been proven time and again with guys who can speak English or guys who can culturally adapt. They perform better. They're more acclimated with the minor league mm-hmm. ball, and they can move up to the majors better. So I think it would be interesting to see how that stuff would improve if the league were to say, hey, this is important to us now. We want to treat these guys like we would treat a high school player in the US and want them to have an education and a future.
What kind of feedback are you getting from your students? Any consistent story, or what is a typical student of yours? Like, what are the things they're coming home from on the flight going, wow, I can't believe I got to go, and here's what I learned, or this is what's most important to me?
Yeah, I think they were all very awake to the realities of, wow, these kids have it really rough. And I think they feel fortunate to be in the position they're in. This year in particular, we had a couple of college baseball players, a college softball player going out there and training with these kids and saying, yeah, let them all take some cracks at it. You know, have them do some BP. We'll hang out. And they were like, yeah, I tried to talk to these kids and they were kind of unhappy. And I was like, can you guess why? And they were like, oh yeah. Like, I mean, they're 14 year old boys. Like, think about when you were 15 or 14, like going to school, maybe there's a girl you had a crush on, like, oh, I got gym today. All right. Like, I'm going to learn some cool stuff, whatever, go home, play Nintendo. Like, none of that exists. Like, these guys are just kind of like, get up, go to the field, train, work out, eat some food, do it all again tomorrow. Like that, I think that was really eye-opening for them. And I think interacting with a lot of the kids in the communities we go to, like, I make it a point to go into some of the poorer communities. And even if we're just there for an afternoon, just sort of say like, yeah, this is kind of where these guys come from. Like, this year we partner with a nonprofit to install these rainwater reclamation systems on these houses that these folks were living in. And so they could wash clothes and cook with rainwater in these big cisterns that were collecting it. And it was awesome. Really, really great experience. And I think if you were to ask them, like, what was your favorite part of the trip, they would probably say, yeah, it was really cool to do that, because they cooked a meal for us over a little coal, wooden fire, like coals and stuff. So I think that was really great. And on the MLB level, we visited four different teams. We visited the Mets, Dodgers, Padres, and Pirates. And just for them to see the difference between the academies, like the physical structures and the way they run their operation and like what they stress, like the Dodgers have a really great injury prevention system and tons of really great athletic trainer type people on staff. The Mets are really good at education and they'll not let you get on the bus and go play an away game unless you can answer questions in English. And they stress it. They have billboards around the country that said, like, I don't know, it's like more than a team. And it's like kids and prospects in a cap and gown, like getting their high school GED type diploma. And that is like their angle. Like, that's their recruiting angle. Like, we're the Mets. Like, we will take care of you. And, you know, it's really interesting to see how different teams treat all that stuff differently. So I think the students are largely just blown away with what exists, but also there's the disparity between different MLB clubs, the different communities you go into. And I mean, everything that you think about the Dominican Republic is usually formed by their, you know, white sand beaches of Punta Cana. And then you're just in a completely different part. And you're like, whoa, I knew they liked baseball, but I didn't really know this was happening.
That makes me sad.
Yeah.
You want to get out of the ghetto? Give it everything you got.
Oh, wow. That's shocking.
That doesn't seem great for the kids.
That's like one of the wildest baseball stories I've ever heard.
They want that cheap resource.